Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I would also like to ask you to pardon our space as we are still under construction. I am now honored to introduce Tatiana Parker as she will introduce this morning's speaker. Tatiana Parker works as the Director of Constituent Services for Senator Rachel May and has been a TMR member since 2017. Please join me in welcoming Tatiana Parker.
Good morning, fellow TMR members. It is my pleasure to introduce Senator Rachel May. Senator May was elected to the New York State Senate in November 2018. She came to the office after a very successful and varied career in higher education. In the Senate, she chairs the Senate Committee on Aging and the Legislative Commission on Rural Resources and sits on several other committees, including agriculture, elections, environmental conservation, higher education, and cultural affairs, tourism, parks, and recreation. Prior to her election, Senator May spent 15 years working in environmental sustainability at Syracuse University and SUNY ESF, including serving as Director of Sustainability Education. Before moving to Syracuse, she was a professor of Russian language and literature, first at SUNY Stony Brook, and then at McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota. A resident of Syracuse, she has also been active in community life, serving on the board of the Onondaga County Resource Recovery Agency and on the Syracuse Board of Zoning Appeals. Senator May earned her master's degree from Oxford University on a Marshall Scholarship and a PhD in Russian language and literature from Stanford University. She also earned a master's degree from SUNY ESF. Her husband, Tom, is a professor at Lemoyne College, and their daughter, Sophie, is a senior at Cornell University. Please join me in welcoming Senator Rachel May.
Thank you, Tatiana. This is probably the person who works hardest on behalf of this community and all of you. She is amazing. But I think you already know that. So I'm very honored to be here. Thank you, Emily, and everybody who organizes TMR. I know what an important service this is to the community as well. So I thought I would talk about three things today. I would start by talking about why I think I have the most interesting job in state government, and then about what I'm proud of, because I think we have a lot to be proud of this year. And finally, to talk about next steps and what we're looking forward to. So my job is really interesting, partly because of the district that I serve. The 53rd Senate District includes most of Syracuse, six towns in Onondaga County, all of Madison County, and two towns in Oneida County. So it has really urban issues. It has suburban areas that have their own kinds of issues and concerns, and then a whole lot of rural upstate New York. So I get to think about all of those things, and I get to bring them to my colleagues in the Senate, because I'm the only member of the Senate majority of the Democratic Conference between Albany and Buffalo. So I have taken it as my job and my mission to make sure that my colleagues from downstate understand what upstate is all about. And so, as Tatiana said, I'm vastly overeducated. I've spent a lot of time in higher ed. I have been able to take my role as an educator and my lifetime of working as an educator, I've been able to translate that into being an educator for my colleagues in the Senate. And I have to say, one of the great things, I know when I was running and when the threat was looming that Democrats are going to take over the state Senate, a lot of people were afraid that upstate was going to be neglected. But I have to say very proudly that my Democratic colleagues from New York City, from Long Island, genuinely care about what I have to say and what this district, what matters to this district and this region. And one way I can prove that is that at least 15 of them have come up to this district to hold hearings, to hold roundtables, to hear from constituents, to visit the state fair, to visit farms, to visit. The majority leader was up here a couple weeks ago, and she visited the Brady Farm here in Syracuse and the Onondaga Earth Corps. So they've been educating themselves too about this district. So I'm proud of that, and that's another reason why I've found this to be an interesting job. Another interesting thing about my district is that I think we have more higher education in this district than any other district in the state. So here in Syracuse, of course, we have Syracuse University, ESF, Upstate, Lemoyne. We have the SUNY Oswego downtown campus. But I also represent Cazenovia College, Hamilton College, Colgate University, and SUNY Morrisville. So lots of public higher ed, lots of private higher ed, and a really interesting mix of the kinds of students who are coming here and the kinds of things that they're studying. So I'm on the higher ed committee, as Tatiana mentioned, and I obviously bring a lot of experience to that committee, so that's been a pretty cool part of my job. And I guess the last thing is that unlike most of my colleagues, I have never run for office before. I am somebody who is fresh in this position, and I've lived in other states. I grew up in Massachusetts, I lived in Minnesota, I was educated in California and New Jersey. And so, unlike people who have lived in New York their whole lives and been embedded in our politics or their whole lives, I know that we can do it differently. I know that other states do it differently, and some of them do it better than we do. And I've been able to bring that kind of perspective to Albany as well, and that makes it a really interesting job. And my colleagues come to me as well. They look to me for some of that perspective, I think. So for all of those reasons, I feel like I have one of the most interesting jobs in Albany. So then to say what I'm proud of, what we've done this year, because this has been a really, truly remarkable year in the state legislature and state government in general. So the very first thing I got to do after I was sworn in was to elect a new majority leader. And we elected the first woman who has ever led any either branch of the state legislature. And of course, we've never had a woman governor. So the first woman who's in the room making those key decisions in Albany. And we didn't just elect a woman. We elected somebody who is truly a leader and quite a remarkable person, Andrea Stewart Cousins. And I am very proud to serve with her in the state Senate, and I'll mention a little bit later some of the things that she's done that have really transformed the state Senate. One of the reasons I ran for office was I was really frustrated for the Democrats hadn't had a true working majority in the Senate for about 70 years. And as a result of that, there was a huge backlog of legislation that had passed in the Assembly year after year after year and just couldn't get through the Senate. And so one of the very first things we did was take up a lot of that legislation and pass it. And so now we have early voting and a number of other election reforms that were absolutely key. I mean, New York had some of the lowest voter participation rates in the entire country, which is ridiculous. And a lot of it was because we made it so hard for people to register to vote and to vote. So now we are changing that, and I'm very proud of that. We passed a whole series of reforms of our election system. We passed the Reproductive Health Act, which was a very big deal. The Reproductive Health Act, so New York was ahead of the curve in terms of legalizing abortion before Roe versus Wade was decided. but because New York did it then, it was still in the criminal code. It was much more restrictive than Roe versus Wade was, and it had never been changed. And there was a lot of fear that the new Supreme Court might overturn Roe versus Wade and New York women would not be protected. So we passed the Reproductive Health Act. It was hugely contentious. There was an enormous fight about it, but it was a really important thing for me and for my conference to do that. We passed the Child Victims Act. We passed criminal justice reform. We passed the strongest tenant protections that have ever been in New York State. And we did a lot, just a whole list. I think it was 950 bills or something like that that were passed this year, which was a record. So that was really exciting. It was sort of like every week, well, this week is Reproductive Health Week, and this week is Elections Week, and this week is Criminal Justice Week, and we would pass a whole slew of bills each week, and it was kind of overwhelming. The press was we were having press conferences almost every day in Albany. It was exciting and kind of heady and a real whirlwind when we started out. But I think what I'm more proud of than just passing those bills is how we changed the culture of Albany. So when I was campaigning, I was talking about the importance of listening to constituents, of really making people feel like this was the people's legislative body and that we should make sure that we were out there listening to people. So last year, under the Republican majority, the Senate held 7 hearings on issues other than the budget. We have to hold hearings on the budget every year, but other than that, they held 7 hearings, and all of them were in Albany. This year, during the legislative session, we held 36 hearings, and most of them were outside of Albany. So we had 4 hearings during the legislative session here in Syracuse. That started because my colleague who runs the, who chairs the Environmental Conservation Committee made a big announcement that he was going to hold hearings about the Climate and Community Protection Act, which was one of our signature bills this year. And he said, he got up in our conference and he said, I'm going to hold hearings all across the state, in Albany, in New York City, and in Long Island. And I put up my hand and I said, excuse me, all across the state means something else to me. And so we held a hearing here at ESF. And it was wonderful because people came from this whole region. It was the middle of winter. The Albany hearing happened during a blizzard. A lot of people couldn't get there anyway. We held it here and people were extremely grateful. People came up from Binghamton, came down from Watertown, that we had, you know, people came from a pretty wide area, but every single person who spoke started by saying they were really grateful to have a hearing here in the district. And I think being heard as a region of the state, it was really important. So we followed that up with hearings on the farm labor bill, on the housing, right? We had one about the tenants' rights, and we had one on transportation. And then since the session ended in June, we've held quite a few more, or we're scheduled to hold quite a few more. We've also had roundtables on a lot of issues. So we had one a few weeks ago, the chair of the health committee, the chair of the mental health committee, and the chair of the substance abuse committee brought up a roundtable on opioid addiction and prevention. And we focused on rural issues in opioid treatment and prevention and held that in Madison County. And it was extremely powerful. We had first responders there. We had people who run clinics. We had parents of people who had died. And it was very powerful testimony, and we all came away with a lot of important, really important information about what we can do in the policy arena and the budget arena to make a difference in that. So that was very powerful. For example, we learned that in New York State, first responders are not required to carry Narcan. And because of the stigma attached to addiction, especially in rural areas, many of them refuse to carry Narcan. So, you know, I think we can change that. That's a pretty easy legislative fix and a really important one, but something we wouldn't have known about if we hadn't held that roundtable. Yesterday, my colleague Anna Kaplan was up here from Long Island, and we held a roundtable about small business and particularly women and minority-owned businesses and the challenges that they face. And that was also powerful. And I think a lot of information came out there that we wouldn't have had. We also yesterday, or I was out in Madison County in the morning, because I chair the Commission on Rural Resources, we are working on the issue of connecting our farms with institutions, especially state subsidized or state-run institutions, so our schools, our hospitals, our nursing homes, our corrections facilities, and a lot of emergency food distribution centers, so that they're using local, fresh, local New York-grown food, so that this can support our farmers as well as support the health of the people who are eating the food. So that was an exciting meeting too, because it's pretty fun. One of the things I love about this job is I call people, or my staff calls people, and say, "Would you come and you know, share your information?" And everyone says, "Yes, I would love to do that." So we've been able to do a lot of these kinds of hearings and roundtables and get an enormous amount of information out of them. So that, I started talking about that because of how we were changing the culture of Albany. This idea of holding hearings is a big deal. I mean, one of the things that went on for a long time was, because there was a solidly Democratic assembly and a solidly Republican Senate, people just knew that a lot of these bills were never going to pass, something like the Climate and Community Protection Act or criminal justice reform was just never going to get through both houses. So they didn't really bother to do their due diligence about it. The bills would come up, they would pass, and they'd go on, but they didn't hold hearings. They didn't really try to make them the best bills they could be. Whereas starting this year, when we knew that we could actually pass these things, we also knew that we didn't want to pass bad legislation. We wanted to do our due diligence and really hear from people about what could be done. And so the hearings were part of that. Another part of that, which I was very proud of, was the majority leader realized that we have a large Democratic conference. It's a very diverse conference. It's diverse. Ethnically diverse. We have the first Asian Americans ever to serve in the New York State Senate. We have the first Muslim ever to serve in the New York State Senate. Anna Kaplan, who was here yesterday, she was a Jewish refugee from the Iranian Revolution who moved to Long Island. And so we have a remarkable diversity in our conference, diversity by age, diversity by gender, diversity by ethnicity. It's just incredible. But we also have a lot of diversity in terms of political perspectives within the Democratic Conference. And there are, you know, people on, you know, left to center, I'd say, within the conference, but people who represent really different districts. Those of us who are upstate have different priorities than people in New York City, and Long Island is another has a whole set of issues that they bring to the table. So the majority leader realized that if we were going to pass some of these big bills like the Tenant Protection, so the Climate and Community Protection Act, it was important to pass them with consensus. And the only way to get that was by having people with these different perspectives sit down and really hammer out our differences. And so she picked small groups, small working groups, to sit at a table and talk about the climate bill or the housing bill or the criminal justice reform or minority and women-owned business issues, and to really hammer out our differences at that table so the bill was reflective of something we could all agree on. And it was truly a wonderful process. I was at the table for a lot of those because she wanted someone from upstate, from this region of the state, and basically I'm it, yeah. So the result of it was we created better legislation, but we also created a better conference. We got to know each other and understand our differences in a way that I don't think we would have otherwise. And I know, you know, I came in with some, probably less of a level of trust of some of my colleagues than I ended up with, because I was able to really sit and talk with them, like, why this thing that matters a lot to me, like eviction protection, which is really crucial here in Syracuse, means something completely different on Long Island. And so we had to, you know, really come to terms about that. And I came to truly respect my colleagues who had those differences in those conversations. So I know we're going to continue doing that moving forward. It's one of the things that really excites me about going back to Albany. And I'll just quickly finish up so we can do Q&A, but some of the things that that I want to really focus on moving forward. We did do a couple of things that sort of passed the buck a little bit. The thing with campaign finance reform, we created a commission that is right now looking at public financing of elections, which is absolutely crucial, I think, to our democracy. But we really have to keep an eye on what they do. And they're going to come out with a recommendation by December 1st, and we have to act on it if we don't like it. And so one of the things, because election reform was a huge piece of what I ran on and what I believe in, I want to be doing the oversight that we need to do about that. Also, with the climate bill, our Climate and Community Protection Act created a Climate Action Council. And the first thing is to keep an eye on who gets appointed to that council, which I think is very important. And I'm going to make some recommendations, again, because I think we need an upstate voice on that council. If anybody wants to bring me names, I'm very open to that. But really making sure the right people are making those decisions is very important to me. I also want to work on new legislation. I mentioned about opioid prevention, the farm to institution work that we're doing. We had a big hearing last week in Albany on rural broadband. So as the chair of the Commission on Rural Resources, probably the most dysfunctional rural resource right now is internet connectivity, and it is affecting the economy of upstate, it's affecting our farmers, it's affecting children who can't do their homework, it's affecting house prices because it's hard to sell a house that has no internet connectivity. It's affecting a lot of things, and so really trying to work on that issue. And that hearing also brought us a lot of information about what we can do to change that. I chair the Committee on Aging, and that's been really interesting. I went to an event in Buffalo this week about livable cities and livable communities, and the AARP is very interested in making sure that people can age in place, and so have neighborhoods where they can walk to the services that they need. Having sidewalks that are not hazardous to walk on, having in-home services so that people can stay in their homes but get Meals on Wheels or that kind of thing. And also just generally Oh, well, another thing that we've tried to focus on the Aging Committee is people who want to stay active as they age. And we passed a bill, I had a bill on what we called encore entrepreneurship for older New Yorkers to get support for starting their own businesses or taking their own ideas to fruition. So that one is pretty exciting too. We also are going to be having a hearing here pretty soon about how we fund our public schools. This was a huge issue in the campaign. It was definitely unresolved in the budget this year. And I really want to be looking, we had a hearing in Albany, there are going to be more across the state. The chair of the Education Committee is really trying to open up the idea of, is property tax the right way to fund our public schools, and are there better models? And I definitely believe that there are better models, and we can take the pressure off our property taxes, but also fund our schools in a much more equitable way. If we can really wrap our minds around that, it would be a huge change, but it would be a really important one. So I want to be working on that. And then I'm sure there will be questions about some of the legislation we didn't pass that we talked about. I talked about in the campaign, like marijuana legalization and healthcare reform. Those are huge ones that, again, we're going to have a lot of hearings. We're really going to have to be getting those right before we pass anything. And I'll just at the end mention one that I'm very fond of. This was because of my background in higher education, I think, and all the research that I've done, one of the things that was frustrating to me when I got to Albany was realizing that I'm often at the mercy of lobbyists who come in, and they are, there might be lobbyists on two sides of an issue or three sides of an issue, but they'll come in and they'll tell me their perspectives, and I don't have an independent source of information that helps me make a decision. All I can do is sort of listen to the different sides and come to my own, or consult with my staff and come to a decision about how I want to vote on that issue. I think we need a legislative research office that can do some of that research for us in a more independent way, so that we have a source of information that isn't paid lobbyists. They bring really good information, but it is always slanted in one way or another. And finding a source of information that is more independent is really important to me. So that's a bill that I'm hoping to be bringing forward. We introduced it this year, but it didn't get to the point of passage. So I'm hoping to work on that next year. I think I'll stop there, and thanks for your patience, and I hope there are going to be questions. I'm happy to take them.
Hi, Rachel, and thank you for coming today. I wanted to thank you first for your support of the Regional STEAM High School. We know that it passed the Assembly and the Senate, and it was sitting on the governor's office last week when we called and said, sign it. Where is it now, and why is the governor not jumping on this?
That's a great question. And hi, Diane, good to see you. Right, the STEAM school is a big priority for me. It was my bill that passed, and it is, I think, potentially transformative, certainly part of the Syracuse surge, taking the old Central High School and renovating it after 50 years of it being empty into a STEAM school, so STEM plus the arts. Syracuse is the only Big Five school district that doesn't have a School of the Arts. We think we should have one, and that building has the most spectacular auditorium you can imagine. So for the performing arts, it would be a fantastic space. The really exciting thing about this project for me is that the superintendent in Syracuse has combined forces with the superintendents of the surrounding school districts so that they will send their students to our STEAM school if the students want to come here. So it can be a magnet school, and finally start breaking down what I think of as the Iron Curtain around Syracuse that keeps us one of the most segregated cities and school districts in the country. So that would be really exciting if we can make it happen. What the bill does, what we needed in the way of legislation, was to allow the school district, and I don't keep all the details in my head, but it has to do with there's funding that they're allowed to draw on every 5 years. And this would allow them to take their next two sets of funding all at once. So to accelerate that second 5 years so that they can take them both at the same time, which would set a precedent that the governors, the budget office is worried about doing. They don't want every other school district to come and say, how about us? So I think that's the issue. I'm going to be meeting with the budget director and really trying to convince him that this is a special case that really deserves special consideration because of the really unique situation in Syracuse. So anybody who wants to weigh in about it, welcome to do that. The governor has heard from a lot of people now that this is important. I know the mayor, the county executive have been in, the superintendent have been in multiple times to talk to the governor's office about it, as have I. So we're working on it. We just need to push it over the finish line. But yeah, phone calls are never amiss, I think. You know, letting the governor know this is important. Oh, that would be, yeah, well.
Thanks. This morning's Post Standard, page one headline, right. Lockheed Martin gets the biggest contract ever. Now, it seems to me New York State is very dependent on the military industry. What can be done to transform that dependence to maybe a much greater involvement in dealing with human needs and not killing and bombing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think economic development from the state perspective, we're not doing military spending in the state, right, really, but we definitely are trying to do economic development, and often that's where the money is. So I think it's focusing on where our other strengths lie so that we can really be putting our resources and developing our strengths. In, for example, Tatiana mentioned I was on the board of OCRA, and I chaired the recycling committee. I think all the time about the amount of waste that we generate and the potential for either turning that into resources that we can actually be producing things upstate that out of plastics or other waste that's been generated. And also thinking really creatively about how to reduce waste. So that's one where I would like to be seeing real economic development happening in the area of creating an upstate recycling industry that would be a whole different model of how we deal with materials upstate. I think some of this what we're doing with agriculture and not just farm to table, but incubators for people who want to develop products from local agriculture. I think just focusing on some of the more peaceful kinds of industries that we have a lot of resources for upstate and trying to shift in that direction. I think that's the best answer I can give you.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about, you've talked about a lot of modernization initiatives. I frankly am shocked that the state doesn't have an LSO. I almost dropped my plate. a legislative research office. Many states have them. Most states have them. So But if you could talk about the, I'm concerned about the capacity of governments to react to the challenges ahead generally. And 81 is an example. I know of two people who have been in car accidents on 81 because they hit a cone or there was a big pothole or something. I'm concerned about the signage and all of the processes that are going to have to be required for whatever happens with 81. And we all know where that's going, but just getting there, signage, detours. Coming down Teal from the north side, coming down Teal and coming to 690, you can't even see the sign to say 690, what lane you're supposed to be in. You're just supposed to kind of like figure it out on your own. So I encourage you to just try driving from the north side down Teal and just check out that sign, because I have spoken with the district director, Mr. Smith, and he's not responding to me. I actually thought it was a temporary sign, but it's still there. It's shocking to me. And could you talk about the Sunday paper had that big article about the property reevaluation and how it hasn't been done in Syracuse? It also pointed out kind of the need for modernization at the state level to perhaps create incentives or to somehow work towards trying to help others. I'm sure we're not the only city in the state with those inequities. So if you could talk a little bit about that. You have so much on your plate, and yeah, it's really inspiring to have you here, and I'm sure I agree with everyone how wonderful it is that you're in office. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Property reevaluation. I have to say that's not an issue that I've been up to speed on, so I can't say anything very substantive about that. Mostly that's a local issue, but I will look into what the state can do. Remind me what else was in there, I-81. Yeah, so actually signage has been one of the things that I've been talking about as we've talked in this whole issue. It's kind of a small piece of the puzzle, but it actually, in terms of how we use roads, signage is really important, and I think we haven't said enough about it. For example, I represent the town of Salina. The town of Salina is very concerned about what's going to happen to the hotels and gas stations and other businesses that have grown up along 81 north of the city if people aren't coming through along that path. And that's a legitimate concern. And so I think, and I don't mean this in any glib kind of way, but I think one of the things that when I'm driving, when I'm looking for a hotel or I'm looking for a gas station, I either have already Googled where I want to go or I am looking for signs along the highway that send me to those amenities. And I think, you know, if people are coming up 481, to bypass the city, we could send them on 690 to 81 North to, if they're looking for a hotel. We can sort of use that kind of power to really actually shift the way people think about how they're traveling through the city. And it's fairly low budget, but those are big decisions. My mother was the legislative aide to our state representative in Massachusetts for a while, and probably she felt like her biggest accomplishment was to get a sign put on the highway that went around our city, our town, that actually sent people to our town. The name of our town had never been out there. It took years to get a sign that actually had the name of our town on it. So that kind of decision is very political. It is really important for people to stay vigilant about that. So those kinds of issues, you know, definitely bring them to our office if you have really specific suggestions about how to make this difference, or weigh in with the Department of Transportation, which is making these decisions as we speak.
Do you prefer being called Senator or Rachel?
Oh. I answer to both.
You talked about the importance of entrepreneurship and how it is growing among older people, and state fostering or encouraging entrepreneurship among minority communities. There are organizations like SCORE, which is their mission to do that. And I'm wondering if there are ways that we, I'm a member of SCORE, ways that we can become more integrated into that process.
Yeah, that's a great question. So this small business roundtable that took place yesterday was kind of by invitation. We didn't organize it. Senator Kaplan organized it, and I think wanted to really focus on the minority and women-owned businesses. So it was at the Southside Innovation Center, and really was mostly people who have offices in there who are working in that specific place. But I would say I hope something will grow out of that conversation we had yesterday, and I would love to make sure that we have a more complete list of people to have at the table. That one was honestly thrown together pretty quickly, and the time was changed at the last minute, so it was not everybody was at the table who should have been at the table, but it was a very productive conversation. And so clearly this is a priority for my office to be having these conversations. So we may be kind of tapped out at this point in terms of what we can organize this fall, but moving forward to have another one of those conversations would be great. So just be in touch with my office or give us information.
Hi, Senator Rachel. So there are two healthcare access issues that I think cut across regions, cut across ages, and are also jobs issues. One is access to caregivers, right? Trained health aides, et cetera, that whole domain. And the other is primary care and the lack of access to primary care. So I'm wondering what, if anything, is happening at the state level with your hat in the aging committee on those issues.
Yeah, so the crisis in direct care workforce is really probably one of the biggest issues, I think, facing the state right now. And I don't just say that as chair of the aging committee, but we really have, there just aren't enough people. A lot of people have funding to have somebody come and help them in their home, but they can't find anyone to do it. This is true for the elderly, but also for people with disabilities. And right now, those workers are terribly underpaid, which is a reason why there aren't enough of them, because who wants to do this challenging, difficult job for less than they can do, work at a fast food restaurant? So I see it first and foremost as a funding issue, and we need to find that money in the state budget for supporting those jobs, because we all of us depend on people doing those jobs. But there are other things that I think we can do, like creating a career ladder. Right now, people go into direct care and it's kind of a dead-end job, or they just keep doing the same thing forever. But if there's a way to advance in those fields, then maybe people will actually see it as something more of a career that they want to put their energy and time into. But caring for people who need care, I think, is it's our absolute obligation, and we are failing at it. In terms of primary care, there is a shortage of nurses right now that is pretty severe, and it has to do with the workload and the pay, and just in general that there are fewer people coming up into the workforce than are retiring at this point. And so we have a lot of kind of structural problems in the demographics of society right now, in addition to the problems of the cost and the people's priorities. So some of those we can't solve, but we can certainly work to make sure that New York is an attractive place for people to come and do this kind of work, to make sure that people who are getting educated to be nurses are not coming out with giant debt, but are instead able to, you know, take jobs in, say, rural areas or places upstate where they might not earn as much, but they could have a very high quality of life. So, you know, sort of trying to figure out the economics of this so that people will go into these professions. But it's a long-term and a really difficult and a very expensive thing to approach.
Good morning, Senator. On a random but regular basis, the newspaper said tonight is corruption in Albany. They need ethics reform. Those type of headlines. What is your experience with those issues in Albany? And do you have any comments on the need for reform?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So ethics reform was also something that those of us who are new in the Senate, all of us ran on that because it's one of the things New York government is famous for, is all of the scandals and the petty corruption that kind of undergirds a lot of state government. We've passed some good legislation about things like sexual harassment, which used to be just handled kind of in-house and behind closed doors, and that's really not an effective way to handle sexual harassment and doesn't send a message to people that they shouldn't do it in the future. In terms of ethics, I think the most important thing we can do is pass public financing of campaigns. So one of the reasons why there's so much corruption in government in New York is our campaign finance system is close to the worst in the country. When you have a situation where an individual can give $60,000 to a statewide candidate for their campaign, or $11,000 to a Senate candidate for a campaign, you're just setting it up so that people have way, way more influence than they should have in over the candidates. Those numbers are far higher than for federal races. For Congress, you can't give that much. And in most states, they have much lower limits on what people can give. So that's the first thing, is just to reduce the amount that any one individual can give to a candidate. But then I think you do public financing. So in New York City, they have a public matching system. If a New York City candidate raises $200 from someone who lives in their district or lives in New York City, it is matched with public funds. It used to be 6-1, I think it's now 8-1. So if you get $200 from your neighbor for your campaign, you end up with $1,800 in your campaign fund, which means that you can raise a lot of money from small donations from a reasonable number of people. Like if we had that system here, I could probably raise, if I could raise $200 from 200 people, I could run a reasonable campaign here. And I wouldn't be spending all my time on the phone. I wouldn't be having to throw all kinds of fundraisers. I would be out there talking to my constituents about what matters to them. I would be spending my time doing the work that I'm being paid to do. And I wouldn't be always having to think, where am I going to get the money to run a campaign? So that kind of system puts the voters in the driver's seat instead of the big donors. And I think that's the number one thing we can do for ethics reform in New York State. So people who say, well, isn't that expensive? Are you putting taxpayer dollars into running campaigns? It is, but it is, I think, way, way less expensive than what we do now, which is putting those big donors in charge, and then that creates a system where elected officials have an interest in passing laws or shoving budget money in the direction of those donors or the interests of those donors. So it totally distorts the way we spend money and the way we create legislation. And if we can get that distortion out of our system, we can have a much more efficient government and use taxpayer dollars for what the taxpayers want. I think in the end, it's a lot cheaper to do it that way. Plus, you get better candidates, I think. You get more people can run for office. You don't. The first question people ask you when you're thinking of running for office isn't going to be, how are you going to raise the money? The question is, you know, what do you want to do? What are your qualifications and why should I vote for you? Like, those are the questions we should be asking, right? Not, who do you know that's got a ton of money? So I think if we can do this, public financing of campaigns, we can transform that perception of our government as being corrupt. And then there are other things too, and we have been passing some ethics reform this past year, but I think there's more on the table that we'll be working on as well.
Hi, Senator. Thanks for being here today. And my question is about economic development. I've been disheartened. I think the things are changing, but I've been disheartened by this focus on bricks and mortar development, and just it isn't holistic. It doesn't look at the really building an economic structure that is equitable and really moves populations forward, deals with issues like poverty. And I want to know why there isn't more integration of looking at issues like childcare and transportation and job training along with the other aspects of economic development. It seems like there would be so much power if we were able to do that.
Right. Thanks, Peggy. So actually, I think there is. I think that conversation is happening. It's definitely happening here in the city around the Syracuse surge and that sort of thing. It's really, I'm very encouraged by that. I think, you know, elected officials are meeting with a lot of the right organizations to think through how do we make economic development lift the people who need it most. But those are huge, challenging issues, things like childcare. So for me, I think I have focused more on the transportation issue than anything else because you can't get to childcare, you can't get to the job, you can't get to the various services that you need unless you have that piece of the puzzle. So that's where I think we've focused more. We had this hearing on public transportation. We managed to get quite a lot of money in the budget for upstate transportation because we had to put a huge amount of money into the MTA this year. Those of us from upstate were arguing vociferously that we can't just throw all the money to, you know, New York City. We've got to also be thinking about transportation upstate. And so we did that. And I think, you know, part of the issue is sort of making sure that it goes in the right directions. Things like bus rapid transit in this area, I think, could be transformative. But I agree with you. And when I've been talking with people who are coming in and talking about economic development in my office, it's, you know, don't be building your new whatever it is, employment engine, wherever it is, someplace where people have to drive to it. Maybe building it where it's on transit so that people who don't have cars because they don't have jobs now can get to these jobs and lift themselves out of poverty, that kind of thing. So I agree with you. It's a complicated thing, but I know I and my staff have been very focused on that, and I'm encouraged to see how many other people around are also starting to think that way. But you're right, shifting to that kind of holistic view is long overdue, but it's still going to take a little while.
We know that the arts community, it really enhances our quality of life, but it also is an economic engine. And I think the thinking has been changing that supporting the arts community is really an investment. And so I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that and both your perspective and what's going on in the Senate to continue supporting the arts.
Yeah, I'm glad to. So I'm on the Cultural Affairs Committee, And I asked to be on that because this is a high priority for me coming out of, well, I taught literature, but the arts in general are really important to me. So Senator DeFrancisco was a real champion of the arts, and that's a seat that is empty right now, I think. And so I've been working hard to advocate for more arts funding. We didn't get arts funding lifted in any way this year. The budget was really, really tough. But I'm frustrated that it's always an afterthought rather than a priority. So that's what, part of what I want to be advocating for, is that we're thinking of arts funding as, right, as an investment, well, an economic investment, but it's also, it's about who we are, and it's about developing whole human beings and whole communities, and it's just, to me, it's not an afterthought. It's absolutely central to who we are. So the New York State Council on the Arts had its peak funding, I believe, in 1988, something like that, and has been going down ever since, and that's not acceptable to me. So that's one of the things I want to advocate for, is simply more funding for the arts, but also more priority, more attention to this as not just, you know, a frill. But I mean, in New York State, it's something we're known for worldwide, right? The Broadway and that sort of thing. But the whole state, I think, is, I know a lot of artists who want to live in central New York because of the quality of life, the cost of living, and the absolute spectacular beauty of this area. And, you know, we need to support that. Well, thank you.